Rosie? There we go.
One, two. Yeah, there we go. All right, now, we actually have some good news to open this panel with. Hal, can I call on you? I understand, I don't know, this is rumor, but I understand that you have some report on the network situation, which is positive.
Yes, I do.
This is Hal Roberts.
Hello, hello. Yes. So the networking stuff should work now. So if you have a computer and want to get a connection, you just have to plug your computer in and set it up to use DHCP to find an address. When you boot, you just need to go to any web page, and instead of the expected web page, you'll get a registration page, and you'll click on a link that says register, and then you'll get a little page where you'll enter your email and your phone number, and then you click again to register, and then you'll be registered on the network. What this does is this gives the Harvard network your MAC address so that it knows to allow you to get an IP address. Once you've completed that registration process, as the web page will tell you, you just need to reboot the computer, and then you should be able to use any of the network checks in the room. Oh, and sorry, there's a login right when you get the first web page, and you need to use for the Harvard ID 88, so 8888888, and as the last name, Berkman, capital B-E-R-K-M-A-N. 8 8.
That's 64.
Don't confuse them. 8 8.
8 8.
And capital B. I think lowercase will work too, but capital B, and make sure. No wireless.
No wireless.
Harvard doesn't trust the students with wireless. No, they can't. Harvard will hunt you down if you try to do that.
All right, now, I have further good news for you. This appears in today's CNN Money News International and is appropriate to lead off this panel. Linux nips Microsoft in Munich. German officials plan to switch 14,000 of the city's computers from Windows to open source Linux. That's today. The city of Munich said Wednesday that it would switch 14,000 computers from Microsoft Windows operating system to rival Linux. The decision is a blow to U.S. software maker Microsoft, unchanged at $24.79, whose chief executive Steve Ballmer had personally campaigned for Microsoft's counteroffer in the city based on Windows XP. Yada, yada, yada. All right, so that's a keynote for our session for today. The idea of this session is to get a user's perspective in contact with the open source developers' talents in ways that somehow focus the market a little bit better. And we've got a big group here and a wonderful group here, so we're just going to go for it. I tell you how I'd like to do it. I'd like to have each of you introduce yourselves. Joseph, start off.
My name is Joseph Riegel. I work at the W3C at MIT. I've been working on XML technologies, but also some policy stuff, for instance, our copyright policies and such.
Great. And Sam?
Hi, I'm Sam Quigley, and I'm the IT director at the art museums here at Harvard. And in that regard, I'm responsible for the web output and a bunch of the input as well.
Now, let's just pause for a moment there. Art department at Harvard, that's like the Harvard Museums.
Sorry?
That's like the Harvard Museums.
That would be the art museums of Harvard
art
University.
Art museums.
Not to be confused with the Peabody Ethnology and Anthropology or the Mineralogy and some of the other resources that are here.
And do you currently use a content management system?
We do not.
Are you in the market for a content management system?
Perhaps it would be appropriate to say that we're looking for a partner with regard to a content management system.
Aha, there.
Whether
you
or
see?
Not we're looking for it in the market is another question entirely.
Aha. All right, well, we'll learn more. David.
Right. I'm David Weinberger. I'm a writer, and I've worked at various commercial, proprietary content management software companies.
Just say another word about that. What do you mean you're a writer at these companies? You write for them?
No, those are two separate semi-divisible brain halves. So I'm a writer. I write stuff. I have also worked at...
We're getting in worse trouble as we go here. All right, Mark.
Hi, I'm Mark LaValle from Boston.com. The last 2 years of my life have been consumed with implementing a content management system for the Boston.com website based on Zope.
Uh-huh. And Jennifer.
I'm Jennifer Lynch. I'm from the University of Missouri in Rolla. We think of MIT as the UMR of the East. We're an engineering school, technical school, and I'm heading up their web development for their extranet and their online marketing. And we're using a content management system.
You've just recently adopted a content management system.
We've had one running for 2 years now, almost 2 years.
Okay. And Hal?
I'm Hal Roberts. I'm the Assistant Director of Technology at the Berkman Center. Among many other things, I'm responsible for all the Berkman Center websites for which we are currently implementing CMS.
So we have three folks here, who have been deeply engaged in implementing or choosing content management systems, and one person who may be in the market, and a commentator, and maybe another kind of a commentator. So I want to start with the three who have been actually up to their ears in it, and have you each tell your story, if you would. Jennifer, let me start with you.
Sure. A few years ago, we had a team developed at the University of Missouri at Rolla to handle a big problem they had with the web. It's a small university, but it's pretty well known for its research and its engineering. It had an extremely disorganized, rather embarrassing site, and they needed something done about that. So our team was asked to take on that challenge, and we developed an extranet and using a content management system. I'll give you the short story right now. Using Typo3, we put up a 2,000-page extranet in 7 months, and that's coming up with everything, the research to decide what content management system to use, the content, the design, everything. We started from scratch. We had 7 months to do that, and we utilized Typo3 to do that, and it's worked very, very well for us. And how much detail do you want me to go?
Well, I'm interested in what the key issues were. That is, why did you go open source?
Oh, well, that's the easiest of all to answer. We had no money. They wanted a miracle, and they wanted it for free, or for as very, very little money as possible. There were two of us to do this project. We eventually got a third person. We had a $5,000 budget for our department, and that was to buy the staples, the software, and everything. So that cut out a lot of choices. That made our choice very simple in some respects, because we had to go for something that would be free. And we needed something that was flexible. We didn't want a cookie-cutter site. We wanted to be able to do what we wanted to do with it. We had a long list of needs. But essentially, a content management system did three major things for us. It gave us control, it gave us consistency, and it allowed us to keep the site current, which were the three major problems with the old website.
And how did you go about picking Typo3?
Well, for that, for the details of that, I wish my other web diva were here, because Michelle Heiser was to be with you today. She did the research, she went to SourceForge, and she tried out a bunch of different content management systems. Typo3 had a lot of the features that we really needed. It had the flexibility that we needed. We needed a dynamic news thing, we needed to print this page, we needed to email this page to a friend. We were going after prospective students, alumni, donors, corporations. We wanted to enhance the research reputation of the university, get that word out. So we needed a lot of extra features. We needed to be able to make parts of the site specific for specific audiences. Typo3 has a lot of features we could use. You can hide and unhide pages. You can time them to come up. You can put on surveys, polls, guest books.
So it was basically features. You liked the features.
It was the features and also the kind of administrative control that we needed to be able to give detailed user rights administration. One of the hard things about keeping a site current and looking good is to be able to control what people do with that site. On a university, you have a lot of people working on the web that they're not web developers. They're usually secretaries, administrative assistants, faculties with spare time, just doing it in their spare time, or students who do something really wonderful and then they graduate and nobody knows how to run it. So you also have people who have great ideas and they can really mess up a website pretty quickly. So we wanted something that we could give very detailed user rights to be able to limit what they could access and what they couldn't access. We needed something that was very user-friendly because we're up to 3,000 pages now on our website, but we only have about 19 content providers spread out. They're not part of our department, but they're people who are putting content in, from admissions, from alumni, et cetera. So we needed something that was very user-friendly and intuitive to use. We wanted something they could go to a web page, cut and paste, throw that thing in there, click submit, and it'd come to us. And that met those needs. You've also, because we're working primarily with recruitment, reputation, and those kind of things, we needed to be able to change the look. If the branding changed for the university, we needed to be able to do that very quickly. Typo3 has a complete separation of the content and the surface. So we change our template, and it changes the entire site. We don't have to do it page by page. So there were a lot of reasons that we chose Typo3, as well as the fact that it's been proven reliable in Europe.
All right, that's great. Mark, take us through the story with Boston.com.
Sure. So for those of you who are from out of town or don't know what Boston.com is, it's the website of the Boston Globe, the largest local newspaper, regional newspaper, and they started a website way back in 1995. It was one of the first newspaper websites, one of the first regional portals on the web. And in 2001, we were still running the website very much the same way we did in 1995, which caused a lot of problems. So summer 2001, we sat down, decided that we needed to implement a real content management system as opposed to a hodgepodge of scripts that did various small things in a somewhat timely fashion. And so we went through this very elaborate RFP process. We sat down with the business side of the organization, figured out what exactly we needed out of a content management system. As most of you know in this room, content management is a very overloaded term. It means something different to everyone. So before we even evaluated vendors, we needed to make sure that we were all pretty much on the same page about what we needed and what we were actually getting. So that process took 4 months, and we evaluated roughly 20 potential candidates for implementing a CMS. And those ran the gamut. I mean, that was going from the open source end with Zope, and at the time, the Open ACS people, now owned by Red Hat, and going all the way to the other end with Vignette, Interwoven, people like that. And in the end, what we realized after bringing all these people through our doors and reading their responses to RFPs was that there really was no content management system that suited our needs the way that we had specified them. So we made the decision to go with Zope, using Zope Corporation and their professional services arm to actually build our own CMS. And we started down that road about 18 months ago, and we're going to be launching the finished product and deploying that in 11 days. So now that that's out there, we have to stick to it. Do you want me to keep going?
Yeah, tell it. I mean, this is fascinating.
Okay.
I'd love to know more about the actual comparison process that you went through
That
brought you to Zope. I'd love to know about what it's cost you in terms of dollars and people and time. And I'd love to know whether you've hit a lot of resistance or not in the process.
Resistance in terms of what?
You're changing the system. You're making a difference.
Okay. So starting at the beginning, like I said, it was a four-month RFP process. We created a 30 or 40-page document that we sent out to these potential vendors. We spent a lot of time doing that. We weighed the technical side, the systems that we had to run on. As a quick back note, Boston.com has been using open source software for the vast majority of its dealings pretty much since day one. So we run primarily on Linux with some Solaris. We have, until we implemented Zope, done over 90% of our work in Perl, using a lot of tools out of the Perl community and things like that. So we had a rich open source tradition instilled in that process. So we weighed that as one thing. We also took a look at the business side to figure out what was needed for our organization out of a content management system. The biggest thing that we needed that was really lacking in any of the things that we looked at was the ability to reuse content. Using sources such as the Boston Globe and the Associated Press and other news organizations, we package that content up and provide views of it that we feel are important that the user sees. That's what we think differentiates us from something like a standard portal like Yahoo that just throws news headlines at you. And so we needed to be able to have one copy of a piece of content running around and not only separate that from the presentation, but be able to have that same piece of content featured in many places. So that's really what drove a lot of our RFP in terms of requirements. And so that was also one of the reasons why we decided to go with Zope. One of the facets of Zope is the proprietary storage technology that stores all of the content as objects, which allowed us to do those modifications and sort of mixing together of things that we needed to be able to do. So we started working on the development of that system in January of 2002. And at the time, we had pretty much four bodies from Zope Corporation at our disposal. These are people who work on Zope for a living. One of those people was actually leading a session this morning, Trey Siever, who is the father of the CMF, which is the content management extension to Zope, and three other people from Zope Corporation. We also have three or four developers from Boston.com who are involved in this on the software side. Another thing that we did when we started this project was we took a couple of the editorial people who were doing the content side of the business, and we brought them into the project. We call them technical producers, and they're responsible for a lot of the user interface stuff and sort of light lifting things. And we actually incorporated them into the project so that the user was never far away when we needed to get an answer to a question. They've also contributed a pretty substantial portion of the system because they're building it for not only themselves but the people that they work with. And they brought their terminology and lingo into the project as well. We influenced that quite a bit, but it was still very close to the user when we did that.
Talk money, people, time.
Okay. So roughly about 12 people working on this full-time, I think, for 14 months or so now. The beginning of that process last January was doing the requirements and the application design and architecture and things like that. And then we basically we've been going pretty much full steam since last summer. In terms of money, I don't have the exact figures. I think that we have paid approximately $500,000 to $600,000 to Zope for that, which is a hefty price tag, except when you look at it in contrast to standard big R and CMS implementation, which I think the average, don't quote me on this, is around $2.1 million when everything is said and done. Obviously, the total cost of ownership for us involves our time and our developers and things like that, but still coming in under the wire there. There's also hardware that we had to buy and things like that. We have a pretty robust server environment because we do over 100 million page views a month, and now those individual pages will be more complex. So there's the money tied up in hardware as well, which I would estimate probably in new hardware probably close to another $100,000. So I would say when everything's said and done, it's probably been $1 million software project.
Hal Roberts, tell us about your adventures.
So the Berkman Center is nothing if not an adventurous place. We do a lot of different stuff. We do a lot of traditional teaching, both in the law school classroom and outside of the classroom through conferences like this, through online courses. We do research through research fellows and professors and that sort of thing. We do advocacy, so we go out there and we tell the Supreme Court that Disney shouldn't be able to recopyright Mickey Mouse again. And we do advising, a lot of developing world stuff. All under each of these headings, we have a large number of different projects. Because it's inherent in the nature of, in the mission of the Berkman Center, not only to teach and write about the internet, but also to build out the internet and experiment with the technology as we're thinking about it and writing about it. So a lot of the, pretty much every project we have has an internet presence, and a lot of them are very eager to do interesting new cutting-edge stuff on the internet. At the same time, we have a skilled but very small technical staff. So this obviously is a source of trouble in the center. We have sort of someone once said the Berkman Center was very high in concept and low in implementation. So lots of people with great ideas and not many people to actually make it happen, especially technically. So that's sort of what the Berkman Center is. Coming into this, our recent project to implement some sort of CMS, all we have was a bunch of static pages. Through, how long is the Berkman Center? 5 years? 6 years old? Something like that? It was 5 or 6 years. We've accumulated about 175,000 different pages. And all of these are just static pages sitting on a server. And that doesn't, we also have a number of highly dynamic pages or highly dynamic sites that are all sitting in databases. So we've got a huge site, and none of it was managed in any reasonable fashion. We had some sort of content management-ish scripts and some scripts that let various people do various dynamic things, but none of it was really very effective or worked particularly well or made the people who had to do the content happy. So it was clear that we needed something to make it better. It was pretty clear that we weren't going to have the resources to move all those 175,000 pages into a new system because that's prohibitive. But we at least want, so what we really wanted to do is concentrate on fixing some of our current sites, mainly our Berkman homepage and maybe some of our bigger current projects, but also just providing a solution for moving forward so that we could provide some way for people who have new projects starting up and new sites. And we probably get somewhere between 8 new sites a year for small to medium-sized projects. We have a way forward for them to be able to manage their own sites and do interesting things and not overwhelm our technical staff. So we started off looking for a CMS, and my impression of the whole process was it's enormously difficult. You either have to do something like drop an RFP, which is not easy, and it does not guarantee success even if you do it well, or you just have to kind of muddle through. And there's part of the problem, I was actually just talking about this before, part of the problem is there's no dominant open source content management system now. There's a lot of exciting stuff going on. There's a lot of different projects doing a lot of exciting things, but no one of the projects is used a lot compared to the commercial systems, and no one of the projects is used a lot more than any of the other projects. If you go to some of the, there are several sort of open source content management comparison sites, you'll see literally over 100 different content management systems, 20 or 25 of which are systems that you could consider developing a sort of medium complexity site in. So it's a very daunting task, and it left me wondering how an organization without a technical expert could manage to figure out what to do or where to go to find these things, and probably will end up running back to Vignette or some consulting company, which we had actually thought about doing. We had talked to consulting companies, and they'd given us enormous numbers to do this. So my approach was to look at the requirements of the Berkman Center. The reason we chose open source was because we're the Berkman Center. part of that is free as in beer. We didn't have a lot of money, and we wanted to be able to implement something. But a lot of it is free as in speech. The Berkman Center, most people at the Berkman Center believe to some degree that free software is a good thing. So we wanted, if possible, if something met our needs, to use a free product rather than a proprietary one. We have an existing server set up to serve all of our pages and a number of different dynamic sites. So it's important. It was important that whatever we chose fit in well with that server system. It's a pretty diverse system. It's mainly Unix-based and Apache-based, but we run the gamut from Perl, PHP, and Java systems running on both MySQL and Postgres databases. We have, as I mentioned, a skilled but very small technical staff. So we have people who know what they're doing, but we don't have enough people to hold users' hands all the time. So we don't have enough people to develop 8 new websites a year. But we have, hopefully, the people that can develop an infrastructure to make it possible for our users to develop those websites instead. We also have a preference, because we have this small skilled staff, we have a preference for applications that on the administration side are easy to use rather than necessarily easy to learn. So the Berkman Center, because it's got this big, complicated technical setup relative to its size, is always going to need some skilled technical people. So it's more important to us to have something that's easy to manage, easy for a skilled person to manage, than to try to pick something that theoretically the office manager could manage 3 years down the road. As I mentioned, we're highly decentralized. So this means not only do we not have the technical prowess to have a technical department create and manage those 8 different new websites every year, but we also don't, from an organizational viewpoint, those projects are very decentralized and want control over their own stuff. So even if we could do that, it probably wouldn't be, even if we had the resources to do that, the way it would probably end up happening is each of those individual projects would hire their own technical people to do the work themselves. So that was definitely a big motivation for what we were looking for. The other big part of the Berkman Center is we tend toward a lot of interactivity, a lot of interesting functionality in our sites. So we didn't want a content management system. The most important thing in a content management system for us was, in some senses, not the content, but the interesting things you could do with a website. So we were very interested in interesting functionalities like discussion, but also blogging and simple data collection systems that the users could set up themselves, calendar syndication, all that sort of thing that you can get that are pretty standard and you can put on any website. So given all this, we picked a system called WebGUI. WebGUI is an interesting system because it's based on the notion of sort of functional objects that may be content, but are more often little pieces of functionality. So you basically build a page out of some sort of articles and HTML items, but also things like discussion boards and blogs and event calendars and syndicated news lists and things like that. WebGUI also has a feature that's very important, which it has on-screen editing of all the features. A lot of the, if you start looking at the content management systems, you'll see a lot of them, most of them have a sort of separate editing mode where you have some, Windows File Explorer-like tree that you navigate around, and then you find the resources and you choose to edit or do something with the resources. WebGUI doesn't have any such thing. It has all the editing on the screen. It also features, which is pretty rare, especially in the open source content management systems, the ability to do layout through the GUI system. So in a WebGUI page, you can not only set up an article and a discussion board and an events calendar, but the user can also move them around the page, move them to a different column, determine how many columns the page has, and all that is templatized so that I or a UI developer can write the HTML to see what it looks like, but the user still has a lot of control over the layout of the objects on the page. WebGUI also, it's a reasonably well-implemented content. It's at least a reasonably well-implemented content management system. And then it's cleanly and well-templated. And important for us, the template language was easy to learn and use. All of the systems are templated to some degree or another. They separate the content from what the content looks like. The template is the thing that determines what the content looks like. All of them have that to some nature. That's sort of a requirement of CMSs. But some of them, the ease of using that template language varies greatly between the sites. That's important because even though we're going to be pushing the management of the content and even the layout of the pieces of functionality on the site to the user, we still have a lot of work on ourselves to design that HTML. You have to have a technical person doing that. So it's important that that's easy for us to use. I think I've dragged on for long enough. So we choose WebGUI. We've got a beta version of the site up now. It'll be in production in probably a couple of weeks. We're starting off with just the home page, and then we'll be slowly rolling out all of our new sites. We'll be encouraging users to use this instead of the traditional.
Now, you yourself actually did the comparisons.
Yes.
And made the choice. How long did it take you in man hours to do that?
Probably 2 or 3 weeks of full time, so probably half time for about a month, a little bit more than that. Maybe more than that was sort of when I, at some point I decided, all right, this is what I need to spend half my time doing, and I started doing that. Maybe another week before that of futzing around and sort of getting my bearings before I started working on it.
And did you feel that you had any help in doing that? That is, are there tools out there that make that job easy, or is it just a matter of...
There are tools out there that make it very slightly easier. There are a lot of people trying to solve the problem. There are 3 or 4 big sites that have lists of open source and commercial CMSs and their features and discussions about them. Bob Doyle here is trying to start a new site that does this sort of thing. Frankly, I found those helpful mainly in just getting a feel for what systems were out there. So what leads to follow, and a vague idea of sort of what the field of features were. But I left the process feeling like, oh my God, I'm an expert in this, and I'm overwhelmed, and it took me a month to figure it out. How in the world is someone who's not a sort of full-time system administrator and software developer, how are they going to have any idea what's going on and not end up having to go and pay $100,000 to, even for a medium or small company, to some consultant to do it for them?
All right, that's a perfect transition to you, Sam Quigley. Tell us about your situation.
All right. Well, museums are content rich, but financially poor, like so many of us. Anyway, and I might mention that my comments will not necessarily only bespeak the art museums here at Harvard, but experience that I've had at other museums and general knowledge of them. Museums are... we put all of our money up in the galleries. It's all with smoke and mirrors, and you know, you don't want to see what goes on behind the scenes because it's very labor intensive. And that's the kind of website, with regard to the website anyway, that's the labor intensive element is what we've got. We've got the same situation, you know, a sprawling first generation static HTML page is probably, I don't know how many counts, it's in the neighborhood of a couple gigs, and it's not heavily image laden, so it's many thousands of pages. And it is, as I said, the development of an individual or two people who are no longer there, so, you know, whereas we can analyze it, we don't have a complete grasp on it entirely. And we're painfully aware of the fact that we need to find a smart, inexpensive solution, because we've now come to rely, as everyone else does, so heavily on the web to get across our content, our message. And I might mention that this is also having to do with our intranet, because we have a lot of internal policies, you know, staff listing, resources, guides, all that sort of content that any typical enterprise would have. We've got those too. In addition, I should mention that being a museum, an art museum in particular, the way things appear, the elegance with which they're presented is of great importance to us, too. So we need to find something that's not going to be purely a cookie-cutter look that gets boring. We need to have a great deal of flexibility in presenting our information. And I might mention, too, that I want to not totally disavow our current website, because it has a great deal of content on it, but as far as how it appears, one look will show you that it's rather dated. I will point out that there is one area that is relatively new, and it's using what might be called a content management system. In fact, when Charlie first mentioned to me this conference, I was interpreting content management as, you know, writ large, database and all of the rights management that we do typically. But we do have on our website what we call our collections online. It's a browsable or searchable database that's using templates and an XML publisher, and is deriving from a SQL Server database in the back. But that's the one area that we have streamlined the production of information to our website. About 6 months ago, we were going to be tackling, actually a bit longer than that now, we were going to be tackling the process of rewriting the website when our director announced his departure, which we determined was not a good omen, not a good time to try to rewrite the website, because, of course, the message that we were going to be delivering had to be driven by the new director's point of view. We're still in the interregnum here, so we haven't had the opportunity, or should I say, we've taken the moment to step back a little bit and look at the strategy, how we should proceed. And I can say that because of this conference and much else, the time, even the 6 months of development time, we may be quite the beneficiary of this time lag, because we might have charged ahead on another score rather than what I believe we would be doing now, which is to be looking for, as I said before, a partner in the form of a, well, not necessarily a vendor, but a software partner to develop our site with us. We probably would have not chosen to go with an open source solution, but I think in the course of time now, it is much more of a reasonable proposition for us to do, provided that we could come up with the necessary brain power and time, as Hal was just describing, to make a thorough analysis of what the options are, and then go ahead and try to implement them.
Great. Now, David, you're a commentator. I'd love you to be a commentator in this environment here.
Yeah, well, I'm a commentator. I've also been a vendor. Is there a more open-ended question you could ask, by the way?
that's about as open as I could get it.
I was glad that you mentioned the intranet, because one of the issues in general that I've been interested in for a long time, and seems to me it's sort of getting worse, not better, is the artificial split between the web presence, the websites that are being managed by a content management system, and the work that's being done to develop the materials that end up as web pages, more or less the rest of the life of the organization. And as the content management systems have gotten more and more specialized and better at their job, I'm putting this as a statement, I mean it as a question. It seems to me that they've also gotten worse and worse, less likely candidates for being involved in the process by which the original ideas are developed and brought to the point where they can be put on a website. That the split between the external internet and the rest of the life of business is getting worse, and that the split between, even the split between the internet and the internet and the extranet, which should be relatively, you would think, be relatively easy splits to heal, they're not getting any better either. Now, I as I say, that's a statement, I really mean it as a question, but it's one that concerns me.
So let me just focus my question a little bit. I'm sorry I was as open-ended as this. What I hear, and really the reason for the panel, is there seems to be markets out there for open source content management that are natural in some way. The universities, for example, seem like a natural environment for open source management. Museums would seem a natural environment. Cities governmental agencies would seem in some way a natural kind of environment. But at each point, you imagine those institutions facing exactly the same kind of problem that we've articulated here. That is, how do they do it? Do they do it themselves, or do they go to a consultant? If they go to a consultant, what are they likely to get? And so it seems like we're at a point in the development of this field where there's something that's missing which allows the customer to more easily and more gracefully make choices about the open source products on the market. And on the proprietary side, things tend to shuffle down. You get the big brand, you get a couple of brands, and yes, we kind of know the story, but that's not the story open source. And the question is, how do people like Sam Quigley come to focus on a choice that works for them in terms of making a judgment for their institution, their part of a university, their government, whatever it happens to be, to go for open source content management? That's the question I'm most interested in here. So it's on that that I'm looking for commentary.
Well, let me make it clear that I am not a consultant in this area, so that will matter to the answer I'm about to give, which is there's no reason why you would expect to have in-house. Now, Berkman's lucky because of its topic area and because of its expertise that it does have within house the competency to do a full-scale evaluation of all the offerings, to understand the value of open source. But most places are not going to have that. So there's, I think, a huge role for actually honest consultants. There's nothing wrong with that, to go ahead and bring in some consultants who actually do know this stuff. I mean, it's an area that is not natural to an organization. It's an area where consultants actually make a lot of sense.
But if I can just jump in here, and maybe I'm just arguing for my job security because I am a technical employee. But if the Art Museum is doing this, and if the Web Museum is the absolutely huge part of the Art Museum that I think it is, then why in the world does the Art Museum not hire a smart, skilled technical person to not only do this web development project, but to be a smart, in-house, skilled technical person going forward to help them make not only this decision, but all their other technical decisions going forward, especially for content-rich organizations and web and organizations for whom a web presence is so important? It seems there are certainly great consultants out there, but there are a lot of really bad consultants too, and I think everybody has their favorite horror stories. So I tend to advise very strongly people if they can find a smart technical person, it's always better to have someone in-house. And it seems crazy to, in some sense, every organization now, any content production organization, is a technical organization at the end of the day.
Sam, before you respond, can I get Joe to jump in here? You're a smart technical person. Are you the guy he's talking about, or?
Maybe. I have a request and a comment, and the comment I think is a rephrasing of something you've asked based on what I've heard here today. But first, my request is, Mark, when you switch over to your new system in 11 days, hopefully you won't be breaking any links, right?
We're going to work hard to make sure that happens. Okay. But there are a lot of broken links now, so.
and my comment, I think I've heard a couple of different things, and it might all boil down to what was just being said now, but even though you might call it free software, you really don't get anything for free. For instance, one of the hypothetical scenarios for the open source market is instead of having generic software houses with 1,000 developers, instead those 1,000 generic developers kind of filter away and they'll end up in people that actually sell real stuff. And they'll represent the interests of the company that sells real stuff in a fora of open standards and open source. So you don't have these bundles of stuff. They get filtered out throughout the marketplace, and they're able to participate, contribute, and represent the interests of their employer. But then one of the things I wonder about was, well, you know, developers cost money anywhere that they are. If I'm buying a generic off-the-shelf product, I'm obviously paying for a developer. If I have someone in-house, I'm paying for a developer. And Hal had mentioned something, I mean, he has said that OS open source, in a way, has required a local amount of clue. You need to have a local competency. But earlier, JT had mentioned that one of the values that OS offered his clients is that they didn't have to worry about maintaining the software themselves. They had to hand it off. And in both of those cases, it still seems that someone's paying a price. Either the developers and the clue is in-house, or it's somewhere else and you're paying for a consultancy or you're paying for the generic off-the-shelf software. So my question then is, well, you know, you don't get anything for free, and I'm willing to take it as a matter of advocacy now that the open source path is still cheaper. But then we now have a meta question of, in the marketplace, we have this problem of, you know, the information asymmetry. You know, we need market makers. And we don't have, in the open source context, as much money going into advertising and brand, but we have word of mouth. So maybe, you know, the fact that people are talking about Zope and the other products up here that they like, that's probably going to influence people. And eventually, maybe one of those folks will come to be dominant. But that, too, is a double-edged sword, because when you have dominancy and incumbency, sometimes the market isn't as flexible as you want it to be. So isn't anything, nothing's for free. Tensions and balances and double-edged swords.
Okay, good.
Can I yes, jump more. In for a second? One of the things that I think, in my experience in the last couple of years, going back to what I said earlier about CMS being a different thing for everyone, is that the markets on both sides, on the commercial side and the open source side, the products in that space are still fairly immature. They a lot of products try to cover a very wide area as a product, not as a framework. And I think that one of the things that we'll hopefully see, and I think we have started to see in the last, probably since the beginning of this year, are patterns that are emerging, so that people aren't building content management systems anymore. They're building intranet systems, and they're building, you know, newspaper publishing systems, or electronic publishing systems, and you know, database-backed archive systems and things like that. And so I think that hopefully in the next year or so, what you'll see are products that are marketed as those things, not as content management systems. And once that happens, you have those patterns emerge. Hopefully it will be easier for someone who isn't as technical as Hal to do that product evaluation, because they're not putting things that, they're not putting apples and oranges together on the table to try to figure out what they need.
So, for example, the Zope development that you've done with Boston.com, will that appear as a newspaper environment, content management system?
As a product? Actually, yes, it will. I don't know how much I know about this, but type of system will be productized by Zope, and other people will be able to buy something very similar to what we've done. And they're also working on products for intranets. I'm looking at Rob Page back there, who's has all the answers in his head. Am I missing anything? Okay. In other products like that, so there will be different product lines to serve those different needs.
Great. Sam?
I wanted to address a question, although I believe strongly that consultants play a very strong role. I think that the process of choosing a system, in the case of Hal, he did it pretty much by yourself, I guess, more or less. I would see this as a possibility to educate a larger group of users. And by the education process, and I would certainly be becoming educated myself in this process, it would be also an opportunity to develop a little bit of buy-in from the ultimate end users, which would then accomplish both halves of the coin. You'd end up with a more well-considered, I would hope, choice from a larger group of people who would then be predisposed to using it, which is, after all, what we're trying to get to happen in the first place. So I believe strongly that a consultant could help us in that process of a group education, but I wouldn't want to just have somebody come in from on high and tell us that this is the choice that we should take.
All right. Well, now I'd love to open it up here to all of you to help us, and I'm actually going to start in the back of the room and come forward this time. So let's see, who's way up here? All right, Bob Boyko, I see you. We're going to start with you.
Thanks. I wanted to address the question that you'd brought up about what's missing here. And to me, it's pretty clear that what's missing is being able to talk about content management the way we talk about a bunch of other technologies that we don't really understand. For example, every organization needs to buy a car, for example, but they don't hire a mechanic in order to be able to buy a car. We developed a language to be able to speak between automobile manufacturers and automobile consumers that allowed the consumers to safely forget about most of that stuff so that it doesn't require a mechanic to buy a car. And to me, what's the biggest thing that's missing is this common vocabulary that's shared between all the open source vendors, all the commercial vendors, and all the people who are in the market to buy one of these systems that allows them to talk about things that they care about. So, for example, when you go in and talk to a content management vendor, you never ask them, so what audiences that we serve are you very good at serving? Something that to an organization is incredibly critical, but instead they talk about what database do you use or how do you syndicate to a server? Or if syndication is something that's really important to you, exactly how do you do syndication and have that be a word that everyone uses? So that's, I think, my guess at what's missing.
Thanks. And that. My name's Mike Blonder from IMB Enterprises. The gentleman from Harvard Art Museum, can you kind of be clear about what you mean by you're looking for a partner?
Right.
I mean, you know, what does this mean, you're looking for
a
partner?
Right. I think that was my way of trying to say that we need a consultant, perhaps, or actually a vendor. Is the normal modus operandi of a museum. When it comes to looking for a database, we look to the vending community. We recognize that we paid a price for that, and we're not completely satisfied with that, but it is the typical response. And when I mention this, I'm not just referring to myself, but I'm referring, again, to a large group of people who occupy a similar spot as I do.
So you're looking for somebody like, pardon me for using a colloquial phrase, and from the old time, like 20 or 30 years ago, but you're looking for a paladin or some kind of a hired gun who would represent your team and ensure that objectivity is being maintained and, you know, really a fair solution is being put on the table as these people or entities come by your desk with peddling their solution.
Okay. Fair enough.
Got it. Okay, thanks. Yep.
Okay, great. Yeah, all right, once back here.
I'm Pat Albanese with Mount Holyoke College, and I'm interested in the conversion process from a static HTML environment into a content management environment, and I know we have some panelists up there who've gone through that, so I'm just interested in the brief version of that.
Jennifer, you want to try that?
Sure. Well, we took the easy way out because we had to. We didn't want to fight the IT department for the website, for their static HTML, and to convince them to have a CMS. There was 500,000 pages with over 8,900 broken links on it. We said, keep that site, make that the intranet, do whatever you want to with it. We'll create the extranet. For you, show you all that it can succeed, it can work, even though it's an engineering technological school, it's still pretty hard to be an agent of change in that environment. And our tactic has been, we'll create it, we'll show you that it works, let you see what it can do for you. However, I feel that probably the next move is to get the intranet on a CMS system, and I think it's got to be done in stages. I would think probably the best way to do it, create templates. Typo3 can put out static HTML, but create templates for the schools and then the departments that they can gradually adapt their content to and then move it into a content management system as they get to that place. But the politics are just amazing, and 7 months was not enough time to do what we actually managed to do, much less convert the entire campus. But I think that it can be done, and I think that once you get it established, the advantages do become apparent. We're having departments come to us quite often and say, is there a way that we can be considered an external audience-oriented site so that you could put our site, do the architecture and put it on your extranet. And we have done that for distance ed and for video communication center, things like that. So it's an interesting process, but it's not an easy one. And I'll be talking about that tomorrow in my presentation, all the situational and political things and being an agent of change in an institution that's not that easily changed.
Thanks.
Just a comment. I imagine this conversation is very similar to the one kind of conversations people were having in the 70s before PCs came along. You know, with everybody in those days, if you wanted to do data processing, everybody had to have their own engineering organization. And, you know, as Hal was saying, you all have to be very technical, and I totally empathize. I don't think the solution is for everybody to become a technical organization and basically reinvent what each of you guys are doing, the same thing over and over that the other guys are doing. And there is a solution to this. And I'll make a prediction. I think it's going to go the same way the PC went. You're going to have shrink wrap software, and you're going to have people studying user interface and ease of use and finding the sweet spot, the 80% that everybody needs, and just honing that until it's really simple and really cheap. I mean, it can be done for $200, $300. I think it can be done, and I think a lot of it already is being done by Weblog software. When you're talking about a common vocabulary, I believe the commercial developers are doing this. And would be nothing wrong with open source developers borrowing ideas from the commercial developers, but it seems to me that the problem is being solved.
Okay, who else here?
Great.
Hi there. David Heath from OneWorld.net. Just a quick question for the guy from Boston.com. I was wondering about, you said your team who worked on your project had four developers from Zope Corporation, and you had four of your own people and another four sort of technical users. I was wondering how you sort of contractually organized it, where you have a development team in-house and contractors, possibly with shared responsibilities for delivering something. You know, if the worst thing happens and it doesn't work out for some reason, if the contractor is not solely responsible for delivering a working product, there's a dangerous gray area there. I was just wondering how you handled that.
Right. Well, it was definitely a very interesting thing. You know, the bottom line is, you know, we couldn't make a decision between buying and building, so we did both. Yeah, exactly. Hopefully best of breed. I think one thing that we do is we try to stay out of each other's way. There are separate problem spaces within our project, one of them being building the underlying system with which we would have a content management system. And then the other thing was bringing in all of the information that we process day in and day out. And that we have a lot of domain knowledge in that, you know. The biggest, I think the most common word in our RFP was legacy, because we deal with the newspaper publishing system that is older than I am. And so we brought that to the table, and we focused primarily on that side of things, while Zope focused primarily on building on top of their product Zope and the CMF based on our requirements. There definitely was a lot of overlap, probably more than anticipated. So in hindsight, there are definitely clear areas for people to work in. On the technical side, we used IRC and CVS and other collaboration tools to try to make that as smooth as possible. But in the end, one thing that we did need to do was have roughly monthly face-to-face meetings for 2 or 3 days.
Yeah, I wasn't so much thinking about the sort of technical or logistical fact of doing it, but sort of if there were problems with, you know, obviously in your case it's been successful and you're hoping, you know, you're going to launch in 11 days or whatever, but,
right,
you know, if you had a, I'm just thinking about in general, like running a project like that, you carry a certain amount of risk that if the vendor you're using doesn't deliver the goods for whatever reason, they could always kind of turn around and say, well, you know, that was your responsibility to do that.
I see, yeah, the finger pointing that can happen when things hit the fan. Fortunately, we haven't had any of that. There have been, you know, the collaboration environment, two groups of people 700 miles apart, has produced a few hotspots and things like that. But overall, we haven't really had trouble. I mean, we, instead of going with a systems integrator who then goes back to the company who actually does the development, we were working with people who develop the product themselves. And a quick thing is that we compressed very much the number of hops it would take for a user, a technical editorial person, to get a problem solved that could be at the lowest level. Zope is built on top of Python. Zope Corporation has a strong interest in Python Labs, the people who make Python.
Okay, and I'll actually ask a question on the panel here. I'm Sam McDonald from Rutgers University. I looked at Typo and a lot of these others. It's been a while. I've noticed a lot of them have not been very agile in adopting XML and style sheets and stuff, and it seems like they're aging rapidly, and they're not actually forging ahead real well, though my information is a little bit out of date. If you looked at exit strategies for when some of these open source projects, because we see trends, everybody goes with an open source thing, something else rises, and everybody kind of magnet balls over. But is there an exit strategy? How do you migrate the previous almost XML or HTML templates into a new robust system? Or have you considered this at all?
We've barely had time to consider anything but getting our job done, to tell you the truth. But because we had the luxury, dubious, I suppose, we had the luxury of beginning from scratch. We started with the design we wanted. We chose Typo 3 because it had the flexibility we wanted. It's worked for us for 2 years now quite well. I'm not sure.
2 years.
Well, if we had sat down to decide whether this was going to work for a long range time or not, we probably wouldn't have begun it at the beginning if we had to cover everything. But you're right. It's definitely something to consider. That's a good question.
I was going to say...
good. All right.
The philosophical response is that while you probably haven't thought about your exit strategy because time is short, that whatever it will be, it will probably be less painful than if you were using proprietary technology.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's a hand-wavy sort of defense. That was certainly something people should look at. But even if you have, you know, kind of kludgy HTML... but if you have access to it, you can throw an SGML parser on top of that. That'll spit out the XML, and then from there you can use XSLT to do what you want. It's not in some proprietary binary format that you'd have to reverse engineer, at least.
And we've got the microphone up here. Go ahead.
My name is Var. I'm here representing Scripps College, which is a small liberal arts college in Southern California. And we're also in the process of trying to find a good, usable, good, reliable. My name is Var Willis. I'm here representing Scripps College from Southern California. We are also in the process of trying to find a good, usable, sturdy, robust system, CMS system, to implement into our school. And I'm probably guilty of this, just as anyone else in here is, in wanting the best of both worlds, and that I'd like something that is all of those things and is, you know, fairly inexpensive. And one of the things that I know Joseph Regal said earlier was that, you know, mentioning the issues about consultants, and there were several other people mentioning the consultant issue. It seems to me that a lot of the open source options tend to require a significant amount of that, and what I'm noticing is that the open source, when you purchase them, you have to put so many man hours into doing that, and with hiring the consultants, it kind of reduces that cost effectiveness when you're doing that. what it seems to me is that what would be needed is to organize end users together in a sense that, I mean, me being from a liberal arts college, I'm sure there's a lot of other people in a similar situation looking for pretty much the exact same thing. And rather than having a reduplication of efforts to achieve this final end system, that it would be beneficial to have end users come together to work together, several colleges or whatever the situation is, to develop a singular product, like you were mentioning earlier, to eventually have a newspaper system or have a college system. Is that something that you guys saw in your research, or is that something that anyone in here is maybe aware of is going on?
No.
Sounds like a great idea.
Yeah.
I think it is a good idea because I think the idea of domain-specific content management systems can actually get toward usable general-purpose systems. I'm skeptical of, frankly, a $200 shrink-wrapped box that can be the content management system, because the notion of content management is so broad and so vague and means so many different things to different people that's the sort of heart of why it's difficult to choose and set it up. But if you restrict it to a domain like, you know, a small to medium-sized newspaper, nothing, frankly, is ever going to meet Boston.com's needs out of the box.
Not even our system.
Yeah, no. But certainly for a smaller newspaper or a smaller, you know, a small college, something like that, you could get certainly closer to it with a domain-specific application.
It sounds like...
For what, you know, maybe each of you were looking for at the time you were researching this and doing this, is this something that you felt, if you were aware of various other entities or institutions or whatever doing the same thing, looking for the same end product, is it something that you would have been willing to go into as more of a joint venture, using a single consultant or a single group of consultants to achieve what you wanted?
Well, it would be tough from my viewpoint. I think the Berkman Center is a weird beast, so it's tough to compare. The closest thing it would be a small college, and if you listen to the requirements from me and from her, they're very different. The systems that we need, the things we need to do are very different.
Yeah, I would like to say the Boston Globe is owned by the New York Times. The New York Times has a website, nytimes.com. We have very similar missions, but our environments are so different that it was entirely unlikely that we would have ever joined forces to put a system like that together. We're both very similar newspaper websites. I think your idea is great, and I think it can go a long way. I don't know if it can go all the way, though. Yeah.
Well, let me put a question to you. I mean, here we have a number of people from small colleges here. If you guys get together over drinks, you put together a little association.
If there's Corona, I'll
say it again.
I don't know if anybody here can speak to it. There is uPortal, which was specifically a Java framework set up to provide an open source solution for portals specifically for colleges. We looked at it and it didn't meet our needs. But
tell us who you are.
Oh, I'm Ari Davidow from Tufts University. But it is a large effort and it does involve a lot of schools around the country. So this isn't a new subject. It's something probably worth bringing up on CMS list or something, because people using those tools are around and are talking to each other.
So we have, I think it's a great idea too, but remembering the SGML wars, we've just heard four people say, yeah, it's a great idea, but my application is just a little too specific and a little too idiosyncratic to actually participate, but it's a great idea. So it probably is a great idea, but I do worry that when you get down to the actual specifics, that it's going to turn out to be that everybody's application is different enough that it'll fragment again.
More on this here.
Yep.
My name is Rob Page. I'm the CEO of Zope Corporation. We have tried to do this collaborative, let's herd some cats, and they all run away. Because every college is unique, every department's unique, every course is unique. From 50 feet away, they all look like cats, But when you get up close and say, we're passing the hat and we'd like each of 5 or 6 universities to fund a $50,000 project and do it collaboratively, there were some bubble era companies that were designed to do this. Everyone finds an exception to the standard requirements. I would also like to comment on the notion that open source projects can commoditize. Open source, we are here because open source projects appeal to developers. And developers don't like to see things all buttoned up in clean boxes. They like to see wires hanging out. Because the more wires that are hanging out, the more opportunity they have to solder their specific piece of electronics on the outside. And that is driven by two things. One, soldering is fun. And we can't, that has serious business implications, because if software development wasn't fun, the act of creating wasn't fun, we wouldn't be here either. We wouldn't have tens of thousands of people contributing to Typo and Zope and PHP. So I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Now, more on this. Okay. I'll come back to you at the end. Here you go. Tell us who you are.
My name is Carl Goldstein. I'm CEO of Frontleaf. I just gave myself that title. I think there's two main things that that all of this comes back to. And one is that when an organization decides to create a website, they're talking about their public face to the world. And for the same reason that a company, that all companies don't put blue wrappers on all of their products with black lettering or white or whatever, everybody wants their public face to look unique. Everyone wants it to look slightly different. And for that reason, I think it's going to be, it is very hard. It's not like just a word processor where everyone wants the documents to look more or less the same. Everyone wants their presence to look slightly different, and that's why we're here. That's why I have a job. And I think the other reason that makes it hard to really standardize things is that one of the characteristics of a content management system is that it involves more than one person. And every organization has different processes for how they do anything, including creating and publishing content. And I think those two things are really key for why there can exist such a plethora of content management systems and why it's going to be hard to shrink wrap them.
Thanks. Go to it, Philip.
I'm Philip Howard. My company is PMH Interworks in Toronto, Canada area. I just wanted to say that what you've been talking about is exactly why God created consultants. We like nothing more than to reuse intellectual capital, and I would be pleased to reuse any information from one project on another. That's to my benefit, and I believe it's to my client's benefit as well. The one caveat there is that there are always limitations in the amount of information that can be handled, however large the consulting company or group. And although I would do my best to remain vendor agnostic, or in this case, open source project agnostic, it would be beneficial to me to partner with a limited number of open source options.
Yeah. I'm Shane Landrum. I work with Mark at Boston.com. I'm one of the developers who's been enslaved to this project. Something that I wanted to add to your comment about how long it took the project is that the first probably 6 months of that were analysis of how we do business. A lot of the cost that Mark mentioned is cost that's going to exist in your organization just to figure out what you need your software to do. Because we had 6 years of legacy process, how people were used to doing business and how they assumed a content management system would work. It all had to be teased out from 30 editorial users. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah.
And they all had their ideas about how it should work. That's going to exist no matter what software you use. And that's a lot of where the consultants are good for helping you figure out exactly how you want to do business. Thanks.
Hey, Larry.
I think I heard two of you mention that total cost of ownership is one of the things that the proprietary software world is claiming is a disadvantage of open source software. Did any of you see that? Have any of you analyzed that? Do any of you believe that line?
Not at all.
I just want to, this has been mentioned about five times, and I've let it slide every time. There's this perception that if you, go the free software route, you're going to end up paying more in engineering. I categorically don't think that's the case. That all these costs that we're talking about, figuring out what system you want to use, and then customizing it for your specific needs, you're going to have to do that with any system. It doesn't matter if it's commercial or open source. If theoretically, the only case in which that might be the case is if someone's created a magical CMS that fits all needs without needing any customization, then it wouldn't be as expensive. But that's clearly not the case. So I think frankly that's a myth, and I think the only valid point it has is if you look again at an extremely expensive development project like Boston.com, they were going to have to spend what? For Vignette, you would spend $250,000 just for the software. Now, his project already costs, on the order of $1 million, so certainly he still had to spend a lot of money, but it's a significant savings on top of the, $250,000 is $250,000.
Well, I'd like to say out of that $5,000 budget, we rolled over $2,000. So.
I think one thing about the total cost of ownership with respect to proprietary software is that the 80-20 rule applies universally, and sometimes the total cost of ownership for a proprietary system could be lower because you settle. You don't make the modifications you want to make to the system, that freedom that you do have with open source software, because you can't. And when you can't make the changes, they cost $0. So, in lost business, potential. Yeah.
Wait. I'm Rick Anderson from Rutgers University. What I want to find out is that, you're talking about total cost of ownership. Is that factored in the maintenance cost over time and the ability to have upgrades? I mean, basically, when I've dealt with proprietary individual or companies, they said 20% maintenance fee. And so if it's, $2 million, $200,000, it's a big tag to keep going forward. What about the cost of moving forward in terms of maintenance for open source?
Maintenance cost is an interesting term in software because it can also be innovation cost. We have a support contract with Zope to help us out after we launch this the system in a few weeks. But a lot of what we're going to be doing at that point is going to be new development. It's really a starting point for Boston.com, not an endpoint. And so when you look at it through that lens, we have developers on full time to do that innovation. I don't really consider that to be maintenance much at all. So the maintenance costs themselves, upgrading hardware, keeping support contracts in place and things like that, I think are fairly minimal.
Definitely.
Right. And I'd like to add that this, I think, is one place where free software sells, because if you pay Zope for a maintenance contract and you're talking to the person who developed Zope and you have a direct line to that person, you're likely to get a pretty good answer pretty quickly. I've been there where I've paid the $150,000 a year to Oracle for a support contract, and I'm talking to someone literally four or five levels removed from a developer who has any idea of what's going on, and it takes me a week to get an answer to anything.
My name is Stephen Gettner. I'm actually the CTO of Crown Peak Technology, and I'd like to sort of throw a little bit of a wrench into the works. Have you guys ever heard of a software as a service, where basically what happens is you're leasing the application sort of on a monthly basis? Because it deals with a lot of these factors that you're basically talking about. You're given a set amount per month. It's a low fee. It's a low cost. The vendor is inclined to maintain the software over time. You get your upgrades essentially for free. And at Crown Peak, at least, we do the entire implementation, so there's no sort of integration cost that's part of the service that we provide. I was just curious if you had heard about that model or had a look at it.
That's what I did until before I came to the Berkman Center. And would be a little... The great part about it is you pay a low monthly fee and someone just handles the whole thing, including the service for you. The bad part is a year later... you still have to keep them paying their fee, or you turn off the website. And I've been the one that turns off the website, so that's the drawback.
I think a related thing goes back to this man's comment about exit strategies. When you're dealing with an open source product that has a critical mass within the community, your exit strategy is kind of moot because it will continue to be developed and new features and new languages and buzzwords and things like that will be added as long as that product itself is viable. That's the critical mass.
Here, let's get on mic here.
In many ways, I've seen that you've got basically two kinds of systems, the development frameworks and then the almost out-of-the-box stuff, Typo being and WebGUI being closer to out of the box, Midgard and Zope being a lot more development. So you've got integrators and developers using the frameworks, and you've got installers using Typo and WebGUI. Usually they don't have the Python and the C to the high degree to actually write the migration tools. The high-end developers are already over at Midgard, and they're not going to come back and help the Typo 3 people. And if the company hasn't done it on their own, I'm not sure you have an exit strategy going on for all the open source stuff, even if there is a rather large installed base.
So I was going to say, I saw that response coming on my earlier comment. You're going to say, well, are you going to write the SGML to XML to XLT? And again, someone's still going to have to do it, but if it's open source, it's likely that the product you're using now might even be nice enough to have an export plugin that'll put it something in a format that someone else can take in, or the latest and greatest open source project will have an import project plugin, or maybe someone will just write the import plugin and open source it. So, I mean, again, nothing's for free, but it certainly makes things a bit more fluid.
And also true of commercial applications. Right. I don't think that's a place where open source has an advantage over commercial.
Well, the commercial is definitely happy to do the import. If I have a new product, I'm happily. Yeah.
But they also frequently have an export capability, or an API for sucking the stuff out. So,
I've never found something that allows me to put Microsoft Word into decent XHTML.
Well, that's not the content. That's not the CMS problem. That's the authoring problem.
I mean, it's the same. It's content. It's hard for me to get a good export filter.
Shane, jump in.
To your comment about exit strategies and migration. When we were selecting CMSs, one of the things we looked at was what kind of organization is there behind this open source project. And that ruled out a lot of very technically excellent projects because we are still going to be using this thing 3 to 5 years down the road. And we knew that we needed something that was still going to be viable and that we could get fixed and help for. There's a lot of open source stuff out there that really would benefit greatly. If it's a good technical project, it needs a company behind it who can say, look, we have a track record in developing for media or for universities or whatever. And I think that may be a serious weakness of some open source projects.
Yeah, we sent our RFP out to people like Midgard and OpenInteract.
Here, back here. Tell us who you are.
Tony Byrne from CMS Watch, and actually you anticipated my question, which was, I was wondering, because people often, when they select commercial software packages, they do due diligence of the viability of the company, and I was just curious what due diligence you had done of the viability of the project to carry forward. So I'll ask you another question instead, which is, aside from the possible angle of these are for those of you who have either selected a package and are about to go into implementation or have implemented. If you had it all over again, what one thing would you? What's the most important thing that you would do differently?
I think from the planning phase of our project, I would have spent more time figuring out the separation of labor between the two groups. I think early on that was somewhat muddled, and having people have their own problems to solve themselves would have been an easier way to get some of the early problems pushed through.
Jennifer?
I would have spent a great deal more time involving the campus, educating the campus, getting buy-in from the campus. Our project's been a great success in terms of the Board of Trustees loves it, the Chancellor loves it. We're getting inquiries from universities all over. Our goals have been met in almost every way, but the resistance to success was a great surprise to us. And so I would spend more time really assessing the political situation and getting buy-in, getting more input whether we used it or not.
Hal?
I would have spent more time talking to my users in the beginning of the project. We were kind of in a weird state where we were assuming that we were going to pay someone a lot of money to do this for us because we didn't have the time to do it ourselves. And I started off the work by saying, well, maybe or maybe not. So, you know, on a Saturday afternoon, I'll go fiddle around and see what happens. And all of a sudden, that's three Saturday afternoons, and it's working into Monday mornings and Wednesday afternoons. And I got to a point where I was sort of muddled, and then I had to step back and say, wait a minute, I have to figure out exactly what we need to do and what the point of this is and talk to people about it. And once I did that, the whole thing coalesced and became a lot clearer.
Before we close, which I'm very shortly about to do, I'd like to ask the man who's behind the camera here to step out for a moment and assume the role of actually a speaker, because he is, wait a second, you're about to put yourself over unless you take your phones off. Would you tell us what you're doing with CMS? Tell us who you are and what you're doing with CMS.
I'm Bob Doyle, and I've just set off on a project to try to develop a markup language for content management systems, a rather abstract notion of using the XML tools we all talk about in our own space. Practice what we preach. Imagine a website where you can go and find all the CMSs. At the moment, we have about 55, and ask vendors to come to the space and try to describe what they're doing. Now, that isn't easy because they all have very different views. But I'm working with Bob Boyko at the University of Washington, whose lovely book has already tried to talk about evaluating systems, which is a different challenge from mine, but I hope we'll work together on that. I come from a background of doing feature tables, charts in magazines like New Media, in which we were famous for looking at editing systems and point by point, what did they do? And I developed a database system where vendors could call into the magazine online and edit their data. Because previously, people did that via fax, and they often had errors. And we developed an error-free way the vendor could put in their information. Now, this is certainly not perfect, and it doesn't begin to find out what CMS you really need. As Hal says, that's a continuing job. But with hundreds of systems, I am now the editor of the DMOS Open Directory Project for content management. And I count 550 CMSs in the DMOS, with another 300 or 400 wanting to get in. And it's an enormous expanding field. So the sense of the thing is, could we get vendors to put in their information and allow you to have a chart that shows up in a side-by-side comparison? Why is Zope different from Midgard? Can you see it? And it may be not possible to really see that, but that's our goal, and it's a work in progress. But before that, it's just a system of going to a website somewhere, which is called cmsreview.com, and putting in the sort of system you think you're looking for. Maybe you're a Java house, so you want to say, tell me only stuff that's Java, or you love PHP because you're doing that. And you can now click and say, tell me about PHP, back come 35 systems. So it's a simple concept. But as I say on the site, this is no substitute for getting your own people to know what you need. It's no substitute for using a good consultant to help you find out what you need. But I do understand that a lot of money is spent today by consultants, for consultants who just do a look at the world and come back and report for a few thousand dollars roughly what's there. And I think we will make that a little easier for organizations and cheaper to find out about where they want to be. But we've developed this idea of steps of how to do it. Step one is just find out what's out there. Step two is to buy some books, and we list all the great books on content management, including Bob's, and Florian Stahl has just done a great study in Germany. We have a lot of studies, and we say step two, read a few books, learn the jargon, learn the industry, because then when you hire the Tony Burns, okay, the James Robertsons out of Australia,
Jerry McGovern or Bob, you'll get a lot more money out of your consulting because you will know about the industry some. And I'm talking about people who don't know much yet. They're just a small school or a small business, and they've heard that they better get their website act together. So I'm trying to provide a space where you can come, find out the jargon, find out where the books are, the articles, the research reports like Frank Gilbane puts out, and articles written in magazines, trade shows, websites, trying to exhaustively collect it all so that people can get a little bit about it. But meantime, Charlie and I have been doing this video gig together, and I've been working with Charlie in Jamaica and enjoying that. We made a video about that, and so I decided to come out and video this one. We'll put it all on the website.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. All right, now that brings us to the close of this session. I want to thank our panelists very much, and wish you would join me in thanking them, please.